Hello, and welcome to the DMV Business Show, a weekly show where we get to meet local business and community leaders in the DC, Maryland, and Virginia area. They get to impact their story and how they got there. You can expect to hear advice and learn about their journey and how they went from point A to point B. My name is Otto Sevilla, and I'm a commercial real estate advisor in the local DC, Maryland, and Northern Virginia area. I have been very fortunate to have worked with many amazing entrepreneurs and executives, from startup founders to international Fortune 500 companies. And one of the things I love about what I do is I get to form these great relationships with some interesting people. I get to know them and I learn about how it all started. And I love hearing a good business story. When I'm not working in commercial real estate, I just also happen to be the host of this show. So please enjoy and welcome to the DMV Business Show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the DMV Business Show. I'm your host, Otto Sevilla. And today I have a very special guest for you, Colin Gilchrist. Colin is the CEO and co-founder of Union Kitchen. Welcome to the show, Colin.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat with you and have a fun conversation.
I am too. As I mentioned offline before we started recording, I think it's really cool what you're doing there at Union Kitchen, and I can't wait for the audience to hear all about it. But before we go that route, if you can just explain to everyone, what is Union Kitchen if they don't know about it?
Yeah, my pleasure. Union Kitchen is a food business accelerator. And so what that means is we are helping start and grow successful food businesses here in the DC area. And the way we're doing that's in a few buckets, but one, we try to find exciting food entrepreneurs that want to make a consumer packaged good product and manufacture it. And so what that means, consumer packaged good product, that's something you're gonna find at a grocery store shelf, like things I have, you know, behind me in the picture, whether it's snacks or chips or beverages, coffee. And so we want them to build business, and we help them through our network, through our kind of education. We've got kind of online and in-person education and just a ton of resources. And then we couple these more, you know, programmatic things with building an infrastructure here in DC that both engages with the region, but also acts as really the launch pad. And so what that looks like in kind of the most, people forward way is we have stores. So we've got right now 6 stores throughout the DC area. We've got 5 in DC proper, and we've got 1 in Arlington. And we want to open, you know, a handful more over the next few years. In our stores are coupled with a distribution company, you know, where we buy and sell food to places like Yes and Mom's and Whole Foods and Giant. And the food we're buying is the food that's being made by these brands that are starting and growing here with us in DC. And the whole goal of that is to create this launch pad, this ecosystem where people, you know, can learn how to build a successful brand, listen to the customers, and build something better. And so that's what they're doing. And, we've got the stores where people engage with that.
I love, Colin, how you basically almost own the whole logistic chain, you know, from start to the end. And I can't wait to get into all that. But before that, are you originally from the DMV area, or where did you grow up?
No, sir. So I grew up in Massachusetts on the South Coast near New Bedford, Massachusetts. And I moved down to DC in 2010. So I've been here, you know, 10 plus years, certainly think of this as my home.
How far is that area in Massachusetts to, I guess, would it be the major city, Boston, or?
Yeah, it's an interesting region. You know, I think a lot of people think of maybe New Bedford as the center, just because it's kind of a cultural center. It's a small city of 100,000. It's about 20 minutes from Providence and about, you know, 45 minutes to an hour from Boston.
Okay.
So just nestled on the coast down there, fishing town with a vibrant port. A lot of scallops come out of there. Yeah, so, I grew up there, bounced around, ended up in DC though, and absolutely love it here.
Growing up there in that region in Massachusetts, what were you into as a child growing up? Were fishing or other activities?
I've certainly fished, but I would not call it, you know, what I was into. You know, I was took school seriously and took sports seriously. So I love playing sports. You know, I had good parents who pushed me to learn and do well in school. So I'd say, you know, that was the focus. Was playing football and basketball and baseball and other sports, trying to do well in school. So my parents are happy with me and, you know, go to college one day.
Okay. So you did everything all through high school, Massachusetts, and after high school, what happened next?
I went to college. Okay. So, you know, I got that out of the way. I went to Dartmouth College up in New Hampshire. So a few hours north, colder, not near the water. A fun place though, a great place to learn. I got to play football up there. And got to be, you know, more important, I think, part of a team, right? And part of a big team. You know, there's 100 some people on that team each year, and you're part of a community. And, you know, interestingly for me, you know, what Dartmouth really represented as a college, as a place of higher education, it's a strong community. And, you know, that's always been something that's stuck with me and kind of defined what I think about and what I'm looking for, you know, in my life is having this kind of engagement with a community of people that are focused on a goal. And I think a lot of that probably comes from playing sports, right? That's what you do, right? You want to win games, both, you know, for the team, you know, for the, maybe the town or the institution you represent, you know, and also for yourself within that.
Sure. What position did you play in football?
I was a defensive end in college.
Okay. Were you thinking NFL, or you're just like, hey, let me just do my time in college, get an education, and maybe the NFL's not in the picture?
Yeah, well, you know, unfortunately, not good enough football player to have that option. But everyone dreams about that. You know, if you're going to bang your head against a bunch of 300-pound guys for, you know, 9 years, certainly you've got some hopes and dreams. But didn't work out, so I graduated, and that was the end of playing football and the beginning of trying to learn something new, which for me, you know, was food.
Okay. Well, what did you major? I'm curious there in school.
Economics and sociology. So, you know, of some value, but it's a liberal arts school. So, you know, you learn how to learn. You learn kind of, I think, broader topics, and then you realize that you got to learn more specific things when you graduate.
Yeah. I majored in econ as well. But back then, Colin, did you always have an interest in food, or how did that come about?
Yeah, great question. You know, I'd say no, and then yes, right? So I ate a lot of food, right? So I was pushing 300 pounds and, you know, a big guy and eating a lot and working out a lot. And food was central to my life in terms of, like, you know, taking in calories and protein. So I thought a lot about it, but I traveled to Italy as part of a study abroad 1 year. And I was, you know, really kind of taken aback by the food was different, right? I had had pasta, I'd had ravioli, and all those sorts of things, right? But, and pizza. And then being in Rome and kind of being throughout, you know, Italy, things were on different scales. They were better, you know, on different layers. And it helped me to kind of appreciate that there was good and bad. There was performance in food. And that kind of excited me, because the same way sports do, right? You've got performance-related metrics, like you win or you lose, you score 10 points, you score zero. And I saw that in food, which kind of got me excited about it. And I wanted to learn more about it, both eating it, but also starting to, like, cook and, you know, talk to my mother and my family and cook with them. And so that really spurred a lot of my interest in just food in general.
Sure. So immediately after college, did you sort of go in the food industry, or did you do something else and then eventually land into the food industry later on?
Yeah. So I, in college, I started to kind of dabble a little bit, got jobs, you know, at random places and where I grew up, you know, as a cook or a dishwasher, or, you know, I had the body type for a bouncer. So I got hired into those sorts of jobs, but just being in the industry was important to me. So I was doing a little bit of that in college. And I didn't know what I wanted to do in graduating college. So I putzed around. I lived in Costa Rica for a little bit. I was in Chicago. I was in New York. Eventually, you know, decided to, you know, work on a career that I could get excited about. And that's where I leaned in on food and got my first kind of significant job in Boston, working in food, managing a cafeteria at Suffolk University.
Wow, that's great. Okay, so that was your entrance there.
Yeah, that was like the real thing, right? I had like a salary, I had responsibilities, that was a lot of fun. But you know, for me, I felt like I had to learn so much. So I just went about getting other jobs on top of that. So basically, you know, 22, whatever, 23 in Boston, I've got the one job, and you know, 2 weeks later, I was like, cool, this is great. I'm learning how to manage, I'm learning food service. I want to learn restaurants. I want to learn bars. I want to learn, you know, food trucks, whatever. And so I went out getting those sorts of jobs. I got a job as like a prep cook, a second job. Then I got a third job at a bar as a bar back. And, I rotated through those for a few years, just trying to work in places that were interesting and I could learn. And it might be basics, like, you know, how to wash dishes, or it might be more advanced, like cool cooking techniques that were, you know, exciting and were expanding my skill set.
You know, that's smart, even back then, Colin, how you sort of were strategic and just exposing yourself to different roles in the food industry just to see what pulled you, what interested you, what did not interest you.
And that's how I thought about it a little bit. It was, you know, I don't necessarily know the answer. And a lot of times in food, there's not a clear path. You know, a lot of kids I went to school with, you know, there's clear paths into successful careers. You know, you can go to law school, you can go to medical school, you can go to, you know, other graduate schools, you can become a consultant, you know, and there's good paths and you learn a lot and it's straightforward. Food doesn't really have that so much. And so you just kind of figure it out. And so I, you know, my mentality, you know, was maybe that of a football player. I'm just going to kind of run head first into this and make a mess of it and see if I learn something from that and if I still like it. So I just took all these random jobs and, you know, tried to find out what I liked about it. And, you know, I found out I really loved it.
So trying all these different things in the food industry, what were you leaning more towards as far as your interest and your passion there?
You know, I going back, you know, economics is interesting to me because the kind of the macro and the micro, right? And the different ways we think about incentives, both, you know, locally, maybe labor economics, like why do people work or not work? But also globally, like why do economies grow and not grow? And so while I'm working and learning about food, I'm also thinking a lot about like, you know, why does local food matter? Does anyone care? You know, climate change, how does this fit into these things? And so, you know, I'm learning these kind of nitty gritty skills of food. At the same time, you know, I got my head in the cloud a little bit about, you know, what's the purpose and, you know, what am I going to do with my life? And so I'm kind of doing this almost like, you know, big picture thinking. And that's based on, you know, not a lot of real things. And I'm doing this really nitty gritty stuff of, you know, working for free and washing dishes at like a good restaurant. And so I'm challenged and trying to figure that out because there's this one path of food of like, great, I guess, you know, I will open a restaurant one day or something to that effect. But it's not really what I want, right? It feels not really, you know, digging into all the things that I care about and I'm passionate about. So I was struggling with that, you know, and, you know, I moved down to DC, after a few years, was down here doing the same stuff, you know, having multiple jobs at different restaurants. And was a little worried about that career path. So I started looking at like graduate school and law school and all these things. That process made it clear to me I didn't want to do those. And so I was a little challenged at kind of what was the next step in my career, a bit of like an inflection point.
Yeah, I feel the same way. For a period of time, a while back, I was thinking maybe an MBA or something, but I'm like, I don't see myself corporate or what am I going to do? Consult in Wall Street. And yeah. I grew up always in the DC metro area. And I was like, yeah, maybe I'll move up to New York one day. But it wasn't, I agree. I just thought about it. I'm like, I don't think so. Not for me.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, I went through that and I was like, man, I'm probably a difficult person to employ in a corporate setting anyway, so I'm paying the ass. Yeah, so I was struggling with that. But all those interests, all those things is kind of what made me start thinking about what became Union Kitchen. You know, just food and, you know, this was the major thing I'm thinking about, right? I was working at corporate food and we were making lots of food that was not good with no care for where the food came from, the nutrition or any of that stuff. We're just making food for kids in school, right? And there's a pride in that and there's honor in that. But there's also some things that are not great. But you know what? They make a ton of money doing that. And then I'm working at these really cool restaurants and everyone's so passionate. Like the cooks, they stay extra hours. They work their butts off. Everyone talks about food constantly. It's so fun. I'd work there for free. In many cases I did. But they don't make money. The chef's working 100 hours. They can't go home. You know, they got to cut potatoes, you know, despite being 60 years old and, you know, they're not that pumped about it. And I'm really just struck by this. These passionate, smart, caring people have a business model that doesn't work. I mean, restaurants just largely don't work, right? I mean, what's the failure rate? It's like 90%, you know, people don't make much money. Yet you also have people in food that are making money. And all I can think about is how do you solve that? Could you take those same principles, those same ideas of these larger companies, could you apply them to the passion and the interests and just like the intelligence of these people, right? And could you then make an economy that does work so that food isn't just this kind of like fun, cute thing and a terrible investment, but rather like we can have our smartest people, our best people, our capital flowing into, you know, passionate, creative, smart individuals and entrepreneurs that are also going to be successful. And, you know, as someone who's been around, they're like, yeah, you see all the restaurants fail. You see all the farmers markets, you know, change over every year. And that's just, for me, it was kind of sad. And, I spent a lot of time thinking about like, why does this have to be? Why does everyone F this up? And trying to figure out what everyone was getting wrong. So maybe could help out.
Sure. So Union Kitchen, what it is today, I'm sure was very different when it started many years ago. So that original idea, Colin, was it what, let me build a kitchen, let me start with a CPG brand, or what was the beginning of it?
Well, there's a theme that runs through then and now. And yeah, a lot has changed because, you know, I was 26 and clueless about anything. But what I wanted to do was solve the problems that entrepreneurs were facing that stopped them from being successful and stopped what would be successful people from even getting into food, right? You know, like of my graduating class, who got into food? No one, right? Like, but what if food was a good business to get into? We got lots of smart people into it. I bet we do cool shit. I bet we could solve this whole like obesity problem, right? I bet we could solve and make better food, make better communities and all this fun stuff. So that was the threat from the beginning. But what did we do? Well, we got a kitchen because my sister, myself, needed a place to make basically a bakery. You know, she was baking cookies. We had met all these friends from kind of some other things. We had a pop-up cafe called the Blind Dog Cafe. And we met all these people making pickles or juice or cold brew coffee or whatever. And they needed space too. So we're like, cool. That seems like the first problem everyone has. Where do you make food? So we got a kitchen and we started making food and we brought some other people in. And that was this idea of like, cool, we'll share a kitchen. Kind of a new idea that we had seen on the West Coast. You know, hadn't been done out here. DC didn't have regulations for it. We had to go with the Department of Health and zoning and DCRA and help them kind of rewrite some of their regulations around, you know, sharing a facility.
Around what year is this? Around what time?
2012.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, a couple of years after I moved here, just diving in on this. And so our first thing was people need space. And then we found out it's illegal to share it. So we went about trying to solve the legal to share it. And DC, the city was awesome, smart people, progressive people that wanted to solve problems, solved it. And then, you know, people come in, start making stuff. And we start starting to see our own problems that we're facing, right? Because I was saying before, why does everyone fail? All right, well, we start to find out, you know, this shit's hard. It's really hard. And maybe it's the making of the food. Maybe it's the hiring. Maybe it's just like filing the right forms so you don't get shut down by, like, you know, the Office of Tax and Revenue, right? Yeah. Or it's like figuring out, where do I sell my stuff? Do I just like go on a street corner? Do I have to like go to farmers markets? Do I sign leases? Like, I don't know. How do I make money? And everyone's kind of asking the same questions. Both, you know, young and old, smart and educated and less educated. Everyone's got the same questions. And we start trying to answer those questions and write them down and share them. And that's kind of the beginning of finding problems and solving them. And so people learn how to get licensed. Great. Well, you know what? There's a new wall and a new problem they run into after that. Great. Now that I'm licensed, how do I make money? Like, cool. Let's figure out farmers markets. Let's figure out online. Let's figure out this and that. And so we start building trainings. We start building solutions. We start building answers to these questions so that smart people can take information and start building good businesses. And it's fits and starts, you know, 2012, it's 2021 today. We've learned a lot. We've got a lot of answers that we've all learned from, you know, being wrong about something, hitting a wall, you know, whether it was us or it's, you know, one of these businesses that was working out of our space and sharing with us. So, you know, this led to, you know, very quickly, you know, right in 2013, us realizing, hey, we got to help people sell. So we're going to start a distribution company because what we found out is that grocery stores want to buy local food, but they don't want to buy from a bunch of yahoos. They want to buy from a distribution company. So we figured out what that was and we built it. And so what that is it's a company that buys from manufacturers, for, you know, these food businesses and sells to grocery stores and, you know, delivers it at the right temperature and trucks and, you know, and some modicum of professionality. So we started doing that. And that was like our first big solution. Like we built the kitchen, we solved some of these things. And then we built a distribution business on top of that to start selling.
Did you build the kitchen or were you able to find a second gen space with the kitchen already?
Yeah, a little of both. You know, we found a second gen space in 2012 that we modified and did our best with a few thousand dollars. To get rolling. You know, in 2015, we built our own kitchen in Ivy City here in DC, you know, our own from scratch to kind of reflect everything we needed. And we spent a lot more money in doing that, you know, a few million dollars. So there was a lot of lessons learned that we could then apply to building a, you know, a more effective kitchen for helping businesses start and then, you know, grow.
Sure. Now with the distribution, were you also, did you have your own trucks as well and all that, or was that third party?
Yeah, no. So, you know, we're big believers in owning what you do and not kind of outsourcing things. So developing expertise, both, you know, here in your head, intellectual and knowledge based, but also just skill based. So yeah, we bought trucks to do the work with. We hired and trained a team to do the sales, to drive the trucks, to make the deliveries. We figured out the kind of accounting processes that went into that. We made lots of mistakes and tried to be deliberate about, you know, saying sorry and learning so we could do it better the next time. But yeah, we went all in, you know, got trucks and we're driving all over the region.
Colin, I'm curious, you know, doing a kitchen, building out a kitchen, whether from scratch or modifications, obviously modifications is much more economical, but, or even just building your distribution channel, these are pretty good size investments. So are you self-financing all this or with savings or is there bank or investors? How did you go about all that?
Yeah, great question. So I, like I said, I've been working in food. So I had no savings, but we were lucky enough to be able to get a loan to start the first business, the first kitchen, $50,000 loan that allowed us to do some of the improvements. Some partners in the business at the time brought a few thousand dollars in. But we were able to kind of spin up and be successful and run a profitable shared kitchen business and a profitable distribution business in those first couple of years that allowed us to secure, a larger loan to build the new one and to bring on a little bit of investment as well. So some new partners in the business.
That's great. During this time, I know you mentioned earlier, I think a baked good companies and your sister, you and her being involved, was that still going on or was your main focus on Union Kitchen and growing that?
Yeah. So, my focus shifted entirely to Union Kitchen. I just thought it was so awesome and so exciting that like we could be involved in creating an economy around food that could be successful. You know, like I said before, like you just looked around you and food was just not success. It was, nine out of 10 was failure. And the idea of like Union Kitchen trying to make successful companies that then would inspire other smart people to then want to start food businesses and like get this really awesome flywheel, this really awesome kind of self-reinforcing cycle of just like better and better. Man, like it was like, econ class meets food and like, some really cool, like how to build a new economy books, right? All splashed into one. So I was like, wow, this is awesome. I want to pour myself into this and build Union Kitchen and figure out, everything we need to do to kind of bring this vision to life. So poured myself into that. My sister was building her bakery business, which she ran here in DC for a while. She actually moved down to Charleston, South Carolina, maybe around 2015, 2016. And she's opened up two bakeries down there that are absolutely fantastic. They've got a lot of accolades and good reviews online. And she does some really cool stuff there. So if you're ever down there, you got to go by. It's called Harkin and it's called Harbinger, the two spots. Super cute.
Oh, it's nice.
Yeah.
When you started Union Kitchen, when you opened doors to the public, your kitchen and everything else, did you immediately have an influx of people needing that? Or did you sort of have to get the word out there that here you are?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think about it a lot, actually. So no, there was no one like who wanted to start a food business.
The crickets.
Oh. Yeah, but we knew that, and we had this confidence, whether we should have or not, that if we build it and we show success, others will follow. And so there's like five people that wanted kitchen space, like in the whole region when we opened, and I think like four of them joined because there weren't other options. But that wasn't our goal. We knew that if we could prove success, that you could have a food business and not lose all your money immediately, that you had a chance of success and it was a little bit better now, more people would want to do this. And so that's why we were just like, hey, like we got to build the market. Sometimes the market's not there. That doesn't mean that there can't be one. It just means you might have to determine why it's not there and solve it. And so for us, we realized, or at least we thought, we hypothesized that the reason there wasn't a market was because it was just, why would someone want to start a food business just to fail and lose all their money, immediately?
Sure.
And our hypothesis was if we could show success, then a lot more people would get in line. And that was true. And that's what happened. People started doing well. Stories were being told. And a lot of people started trying to start food businesses. So, a year later, we've got a waiting list that's, a mile long, people that want to join the kitchen, that want to start food businesses, that want to learn, how not to make all the same silly mistakes that their predecessors were making. And that was, kind of what our business is based on, and it was proving out.
That's awesome. So 1 year you have a waiting list. Would you say all that growth coming in that 1 year period, was it mostly all word of mouth, or were you doing any other type of marketing or advertising? I don't know.
Word of mouth. And us being, out and about and people that were engaged in the food community, no kind of like paid ads or stuff like that. Cause we didn't know how to do that.
Yeah.
At the time, we certainly would have. But yeah, no, we were just, you know, trying to be involved in this community and, you know, have people that were excited about food, that were on the precipice of starting their food businesses, to hear a story, be inspired, and be like, I want to do that too. It's like, cool, great, we can help you.
So with this waiting list now, are you selecting the next person just, okay, you're number one, two, three next, or is it just based on what's the business plan? Do we think they can be a success and if we can help them or not?
Yeah, totally. You know, it's around this time that we're also starting to think about our business model. And, you know, we help these folks be successful, but to what end, right? And what other challenges do they face? Do we help till they get to $5,000 in sales and then we stop, you know? So we're trying to figure out that answer. And within that, we realize what we want to be doing is actually, you know, finding these kind of awesome businesses and invest in them, provide them more resources, provide them more from our team, give them everything we can, and really just like dial in on what we think are going to be the people that build factories, the people that employ 10, 20, 100 people in the future. And so we shift from this idea of kind of a shared kitchen and service-based things to really this accelerator where, you know, we're investing in and becoming business partners with entrepreneurs and delivering all of these resources. Cause we're like, man, like we need to align, right? Like, I don't want to be a service provider that's just trying to, you know, get a couple hundred bucks. I want to align with the big picture. And the big picture is that this company is worth a lot of money and we want to help you get there. We want to invest. We want to listen and be at the table with you on how do we build this better. So we basically started to shift our model towards that. You know, over the years, fully shifted towards being a food business accelerator. And we want to make successful food businesses that are consumer packaged good. That took a while to get there, but, you know, figured it out. And, you know, by 2017, we were basically solely focused on doing that sort of work and really not a shared kitchen anymore.
I love that. I love that pivot as far as going into, and obviously it's great to help. And I know you're still doing it, of course, but yeah. It's a different when you go from earning a fee for your services to actually now having equity. Big, huge game changer there, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, alignment of interest, right? I mean, you know, there's, I think a lot about economics and really it's a study of incentives, especially on kind of the micro side. You know, people are incentivized to do things, they do them. They follow pretty standard outcomes, you know. And, you know, if we set up a structure that incentivizes us to care about these things, but not those things, what are we going to do? We're going to care about these things and not those things. And as we looked at our structure, that's what it was. You know, my goal was to try to build businesses that could build our economy, that could build our community, that could create diversity and equity and vibrancy in our city, right? And you know, the service wasn't going to achieve that. If I really wanted to do that, if I was really serious about that, well, we needed to be aligned fully. And what that meant literally was being, you know, aligned through being an investor all the way through and being equity partners all the way through. And so a lot of it was just kind of being like, cool, well, Colin, team, you believe that, do it. And we did. And that was the big thing. Got to align these interests. And so that's where we're now. You know, we're aligned on the 10, 20, 30 year plan with these guys, not the, you know, 10, 20, 30 day plan. You know, we're years in the future.
Sure. It's almost like the VC or angel investing model, but just in the food CPG space. And obviously you're doing a lot more than just putting dollars in. I mean, you already have the whole infrastructure in place.
Yeah, totally. That's exactly it. And that's what we want to be. You know, where we differ from say like VC and folks is we're getting involved with people at the idea stage, you know, come to us idea, let's flesh it out. We've got different stages of things that we do. We call them phases, phase one, two, three, and four. Where people, you know, there's different challenges, different opportunities, different milestones. And so we're getting people way at the beginning when VCs are probably, you know, near the end of kind of our process. So yeah, we've got a very long kind of timeline for these investments to pay off, But that's what we're in it for, right? We're building a company that'll be here for 30, 50, you know, years, certainly beyond any of us. That's the goal. And we've set our business model to reflect that.
And now Union Kitchen, I believe, has equity ownership in over 120, right?
Yeah. So we've been doing the equity part since 2017. It's north 120. We bring on about 10 companies per quarter. So it's about 40 or so a year now, because we've got the resources and the team to be able to kind of put them through a program to get their products on shelves and then support them in that and help them grow. And so that's how many we're doing per year. So the number will certainly keep growing, and hopefully success will keep increasing. And we'll see, you know, more products on shelves and more jobs, more factories being built, just like more economic impact here in DC, which is really cool. You know, and I think all of us want that, especially like manufacturing jobs, which I think are critical to an economy. We can't just all be, you know, consultants. So we need those sorts of things. And if we can achieve all that, and, you know, we can be literally, you know, perfectly aligned with that outcome, with our own financial future, pretty sweet. So we're pretty excited about that.
Colin, if someone's listening to this or watching this and they're like, hey, my dream has always been to have my own food, chip, whatever it is, business in the CPG space, what are some things that you need that they should know, they should look out for before they even come knocking on Union Kitchen's door?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of, there's some romanticizing of what food is right out there in the world, whether it's, you know, in our pop culture, or it's just, you know, I'm a consultant, but I love to cook. right? It's like everyone in the region, which is awesome and why I love DC. But, you know, what we talk a lot about is like, cool. Well, you need to really understand what you're getting into. And this is a problem we learned about. We realized people didn't always know what they're getting into. And so, you know, if you're thinking about that, like, get on our website. We've got a lot of articles and blog posts up there about, like, what are you actually getting into? What does it take? What's the timeline, right? Like, if you're going to build a food company, one, it's not your second job. It's what you do, and it will be all consuming. You know, how many ever hours you can think about in a week, that's how many hours you'll be working on this. It's going to be hard to make money. It's going to take a while to stand it up and get it on its feet. You know, this is a many year commitment. And I think a lot of people don't understand that when they're starting businesses. I know when I was 26, I did not know I'd still be doing this at 36. You know, that didn't make sense to me. Because I couldn't understand that. I've been working for like 4 years. How could I conceptualize, you know, running a business and being the CEO for 10, 20, 30 years? So I think a lot of folks struggle with that. You know, like, hey, listen, this is awesome. You should 100% do this. I'm so happy this is what I do. I know a lot of people here wouldn't do anything else. But know that, you know, you're making a lifetime commitment to building a business and seeing it through. And it's rewarding and it's challenging. And you should go in eyes wide open. Learn all about it. Talk to people. We got lots of articles and videos about this on our website so people can figure that out. Determine, is this really what they want to do? And if it is, heck yeah, let's go. Let's build a business.
Okay. And I'm sure it varies by each deal. Is it specifically, we're obviously providing you everything, back of the house, the kitchen, design, marketing. Do you also invest capital, or does it differ by every investment that you do?
We want it to be the same. So we want to be a 10% partner in businesses. We think that's a really good number for us and for our founder, for us to be a kind of basically an early partner in building the business. We're delivering all sorts of things. It's usually about what people are going to take advantage of, right? We're doing all the things. Will you come in and use it? Will you listen? Will you learn? Will you use the tools? Will you take the trainings? Will you go and sell and build? And we'd love to support you along that way. And so, you know, we don't drag people. We're there running alongside you. you know, handing you water and your little like energy bites as you're running this marathon.
Sure. So the resource is not necessarily capital infusion, is everything else you're providing.
Yeah, we do capital infusion. We invest against certain things and we're building a fund right now to be able to invest in later stage companies, more and more cash. Capital is a really important part of building a business. We help in that, and we do invest at different milestones. But we also do expect people to put their own skin in the game, to invest some of their own capital, really go all in on this.
Of course, of course. What would you say drives and motivates you now, Colin?
Same stuff. How do we build an economy that supports smart people building smart businesses and food that can be successful? We kind of have a food system in this country that just isn't that. And so what motivates me is building that, and building it here in DC, which is, you know, I think the smartest place in the world. It's gotta be, right? DC. It's a seat of power. And, you know, we want to build that. We want to show it can be done. And I want to see the food industry be everything that, you know, we all want it to be, which is exciting and fun and vibrant. But also makes money and attracts our best and brightest. So that's what motivates me to get there. There's a lot of really also motivating things, like making some really awesome companies, some badass companies that are successful, that build factories and employ, you know, lots of people. I want to see DC become the most important place in America for food manufacturing. And I want to see this country to kind of reinvest in its manufacturing and understand that that's actually a really valuable thing. So that's what motivates me. There's a million little things to win at every day. And I'm a competitive person. So, you know, that's what gets me out of bed. But the big picture, like, there's a lot of cool stuff we can do. We can build an economy. We can reinvent this industry. And we can develop something, I think, really significant here in DC for DC. And that certainly gets me excited.
I love that vision, and I would love to be of any help if needed, as far as just putting DC more in the net map and just raising it.
Absolutely. I mean, DC is a wonderful place. It's got basically everything it needs to be wildly successful, and continue to, you know, be important and more important. I think it's got gaps, right? And we're trying to fill some of those gaps in. You know, we're not a political organization. We're not a government contractor. We're not a consultant. Those are all incredible businesses and things to do. We're food, and we're food manufacturing. And we think that's a really important part of a community. I think it's a really important part of the economy. It's what we're focused on. It's what we're going to do.
That's great. Colin, I know you're a big team guy, especially coming from football. And I know how important it is having the right team members around you. And I'm sure your team looks much different than how it did 10, 11 years ago and how it looks now at Union Kitchen. How do you go about finding them? How does it look now today?
Yeah, well, a few things that we always think about in building a team. And, you know, you've got business model, which you've been talking about, and then you've got like your people model, right? Because as you grow a business, especially one that's committed to doing things, to manufacturing, to driving trucks, to building stores, you need people, right? You can't outsource it all, nor do we want to. So yeah, you gotta have a people model. So a few things that are at the core of that and that we've learned over time is, one, we're a startup and we're gonna stay in that mindset. We're gonna solve problems, and we're gonna put people in positions to do that. We're not going to be afraid of kind of the difficult things. We're going to find them, in fact, and use those as our advantages. And so, you know, the people that are here, they're excited about that. They want to be building. They want to be growing with a growing company. And so we built our whole structure over the last few years kind of on everyone joins at what we call level one. And we've got 13 levels, and people kind of train and promote and get raises through those different levels, both showing, you know, their competency and our commitment to them, but also kind of their interest in being here and learning this stuff and developing as people. We love that. We love people that are committed to learning. Growth mindset, right? And that's our whole model. And so, you know, lots of learnings over the years with, you know, how do you build that and how do you get people here that can and will do that? And we try to build a system that, you know, lets people make those choices, lets them grow here and run teams and run processes and build all that stuff. But yeah, we've got all the levels, which has been really awesome to build a training program around and get people excited about, you know, learning every day.
How many people do you have overall now in your team? And I know you have different, you have distribution stores and everything, but just overall?
Yeah, we got a lot of people doing a lot of different things, but just about 100 people on the team across the 6 stores, distribution, our kitchen. We've got obviously a corporate team, and we've got our accelerator team. But we also do some consulting work and some career development program where we help folks, you know, with resumes and cover letters and skills to help them get into the food industry. These are folks, maybe they're coming out of prison or they're, you know, they've got some other challenges. We've got a whole program that we also do there, which we think is a really important part of this ecosystem, right? You need, if you want to do manufacturing in a region, you need people who want to manufacture and can. And, you know, DC doesn't have that historically, right? You know, it's not a manufacturing city. And so we think about how do we continue to supplement that? And that's a big focus of ours too. How do we supplement and help create, you know, a culture around manufacturing, both, you know, from an entrepreneur mindset, but also from a team member and a person who does the work mindset.
Sure. Colin, I understand the distribution came about a year afterwards. When did the store concept and model come into the picture?
Yeah, great question. So we thought about it earlier, but we opened our first store in 2015. You know, we wanted to be able to get our products from these businesses, from these members to market. And they were struggling to get there quickly. They were struggling to learn, and they were struggling to have any idea what the market wanted. So we decided to open stores that would do a few things. One, get the brands to market immediately. You're ready, you got a product, it's checked the boxes, you're on the shelf. Two, they need to have very good feedback. Two, they need to have great feedback of, are people buying it? Why are they buying it? And why are they not buying it? And are they coming and buying it again, right? It's one thing to sell someone one time, but do they come back every week, every day, whatever, right? Because if they're not, it's not going to work, right? That if they just buy it once, that means product sucks, or maybe it's a gift thing, right? And that's not a business, or at least not one that we want to build. So it does that. And the third, and probably the most critical, is our store, our first store and our ensuing stores, they tell us what people want. And that's one of our core values. Make things that people want. All right, great, I'll do that. What do they want? And so our stores are telling us that, right? You know, we sell Coca-Cola, we sell Doritos, we sell lots of local stuff. We sell lots of natural whole foodsy type products. We're selling whatever people want. So we can track that data. We can listen to our customers. We're not telling them, we're listening to them. They're telling us what they want. Then we're taking that data and we're going, hey, you know, you want to start a food business? Here's what people want. Are you passionate about something in there? Because that's a heck of a business to build. So we think a lot about that, and our stores give us that. So we built the one, loved it. Great way to connect with people, be in the community, talk to customers, get real feedback, get great data, understand what they want. And so we've been building more. So we've got 6 now. And like I was saying earlier, we want to build a handful more. We want to be in the double digits over the next few years, because these stores are just so impactful at listening and learning, both for us, for the brands, and to the customers. It's how you build an economy, right? You need that feedback loop. Without that, we're just kind of guessing, making theories. The stores are where it all becomes real. There's no faking it. You know, people buy it or they don't. And that's all that matters.
It's true. It builds that community. And I'm in commercial real estate. So I'm curious, how do you go about selecting that right location for the store to just make sure that the community's there?
Yeah, well, you know, we're always working on that. We build the right spots. We want to be in a place where people want us, of course. Our stores are, you know, they're based around convenience. We want to give people reasons to come inside. So we want to be foot traffic first and foremost. We want to have the draw from, you know, 3 to 5 blocks, you know, maybe a quarter mile in any direction. And we just want to be really easy for folks. So kind of on their path to somewhere, maybe it's the metro, maybe it's to work, maybe it's from work. You know, we just want to make sure that we're a natural path for people to go on. We can be there. We can be a place for coffee. We can be a place for a sandwich. We can be a place for a snack or a beverage or a bottle of wine. Whatever we can be to get people in and engaging with all this stuff we have, right? And when people engage, we learn. And when we learn, we make better products. And when we make better products, people are successful, or at least more successful. And so the stores are really this incredible place where these things become real.
Great. Are all of your products in the stores called in Union Kitchen coming, or what percentage are?
Yeah, so, you know, they're all sorts of products, right? Because we've got Coke and Doritos, which are not Union Kitchen members yet. so about a third are probably Union Kitchen made products. You know, we always want more. So I'd love to get that number up as we get more awesome entrepreneurs making awesome products that customers want to buy. But yeah, we're stacking the store full of whatever people, you know, like to buy, so we can learn, and then we can take that information and bring it to the next round of entrepreneurs. So yeah, it's about a third, member products.
Are there any particular habits you can think of or skills that have helped you day to day, whether business or personally, and just from anywhere? Maybe it was from the beginning of football into discipline or whatever it may be, but is there anything that comes to mind?
You know, the thing I always think about is, you know, resiliency or stick-to-itiveness. You know, entrepreneurship, it's brutal. It doesn't go the way that anyone's told you it's supposed to go. It doesn't look and feel like school. It doesn't look and feel like a job at a corporate, at a, you know, an established business. It's about failure. And it's about learning from failure, right? You know, especially the way we think about it, we run head first into failure so we can learn really quickly, right? Like, I love being wrong because that means we get to learn how to not be wrong. And, you know, for me, it was just being resilient and trying to have a growth mindset and, you know, learn from that. And, you know, we work with hundreds of entrepreneurs, and that's the defining characteristic: people that have an ability to keep going despite, you know, it not being easy, despite not getting a win every week, despite not everyone telling them they're special. And shit, that's hard. You know, it can be demoralizing. It can also be hard, you know, not making money for a while. And so, you know, having a resilient lifestyle, resilient mindset, and kind of resilient support around you is probably like 75% of it. You know, you got to be smart, right? You got to be clever. You got to be a problem solver. But man, just showing up and sticking to it, that's 75% of it.
Would you say, you know, coming across hundreds of different companies, is that one of the main important traits, is just sort of that not quitting attitude and just continue to move forward, obviously shifting with the market and seeing?
Yeah. So, you know, we work with hundreds of companies, and we bucket them into phase 1, 2, 3, and 4. Phase 4, businesses that are of a significant size, they have a real valuation, you know, north of $5 million, you know, up until hopefully the 8-9 digits one day. Every single one of those companies went through, what's the line from Shawshank Redemption? You know, a mile of shit to come out clean the other side. And that's what they all had to do. They had to do just really hard things and be challenged, you know, emotionally and intellectually and physically in some cases. Every single one of them's got that story. Every single one's got the story of kind of persisting through the challenges. And everyone that didn't make it there has the same story too, of not persisting through the challenges. there's a there, you know, How I Built This, I think, is a great podcast to listen to with Guy Raz, DC guy. But you know, it's all of those stories are the same thing, right? There's just like survivor bias, right? Like, you know, because they all stuck it out and figured it out. It was all kind of difficult. I think a fascinating story, an interesting podcast maybe, is let's find everyone who did stick it out. Let's find out why they stopped.
That's and true.
And that's what Union Kitchen is. We try to find out why people stopped. And then we try to solve that problem. Cool. Well, there are a lot of good reasons to stop and to shut down a business because it's really hard. So we want to find those things and solve them. So we can take, you know, that level of persistence and let it go further, you know, and let them get further in that business to have less pain early on so they can develop other skills as well.
Of course. What's the biggest challenge with your role in Union Kitchen today?
So I'm the CEO. So the biggest challenge of, you know, running an organization of, you know, just about 100 people and growing is understanding management and, you know, getting people excited to do things, building a structure that supports them and gives them a career. Like, that's a wild thing to do, right? You know, going from a startup, just like, you know, running around, it's like five people, to a team of 100 where, you know, people are building careers. That's really hard. It's been my focus for the last couple of years is building hierarchy and structure and, you know, incentive and purpose training. So that's been super hard. That's been my focus. We're doing a really good job. My team's done an awesome job with that. So now it's, you know, finishing that and figuring out, you know, what's kind of the next major things for us to be building.
That's great. Coming to an end here, Colin, what do you know now that you wish you would have known at the start of your career?
A few things. One, capital. The more capital you got, the easier some of these things are. But it doesn't solve problems. You have to solve your problems, and money sometimes can make that easier. I think that the biggest thing is humility. To be an entrepreneur, you have to be kind of arrogant at first, right? Because the whole premise of being an entrepreneur is you're like, I can do that better than that person can do it. I'm gonna start a business. I can make a better sandwich. I can, you know, I can broker real estate better. I can carve out a place for myself. So you're kind of arrogant, right? Like, you think you can do that. And what I've learned is you have to match that with humility. That what's driving you, that passion, that competitiveness, needs to be matched with you're wrong and you got to learn and you have to talk to people. You have to ask for help. You have to develop mentors. You have to respect suppliers and learn from them, you know? And I see every new entrepreneur struggles with this. And I certainly did as well, you know, just being like, no, I'm right when I was not right. But every new entrepreneur comes in just like full head of steam you know, ready to argue and fight and tell you why they're right. And this is a lot of what we teach now. It's like, hey, love that attitude, but you're wrong and you got to listen. And here's how you can start listening. So yeah, that humility, matching that with that kind of like energy and that feeling of like you can win.
That's great advice. Thank you. I know you said earlier the future is to open more locations here locally, more stores. Besides that, what is the next couple of years or what's the 5-year vision look like?
Yeah, so major things opening stores. We're opening, in addition to new stores, we're opening a production facility for phase 3 and phase 4 brands. So bigger facility where they can be using, you know, conveyor belts and like really cool manufacturing equipment. We want to keep supporting people's expertise development in manufacturing so they can build factories here and not feel the need to outsource things. That's critical. We're launching a fund where we'll be investing into those later stage companies. First round of the fund, we'll be raising $10 million. With goals to raise a lot more than that for the next round. So people can invest into these companies, which we're really excited about. And just keep going deeper. you know, we don't want to go to other cities. DC is the place to be. We want to go deeper though. We want to be better at what we do. We want to provide more things to more DC businesses and create this really badass flywheel. So stores are part of that. New facilities part of that. A fund is part of that. And just getting better at what we do is a part of that.
I love that. And this fund, Colin, it's all, I'm sure, local DC-based food CPG companies.
Yeah, we'll be investing in the folks that have gone through our program, that are part of what we're doing, that we believe in, that have shown that they do the right things, have shown they have humility and resilience, and they've got a product that people want to buy. So, you know, we've tested all that. The market's tested all that. And, you know, they're probably a few years in, and that's who we'll be investing in this fund. So what we found, like with everything else, is there was a problem. People were hitting a wall in the later stages around capital. So just like we built stores, just like we built distribution, just like we built a kitchen, we're building a fund so we can solve that problem for the later stage companies.
Love that. And lastly, when you're not busy with Union Kitchen, what do you like to do for fun in your spare time?
Eat food, cook food, drink wine. Yeah, I mean, I've done a bad job of diversifying my interests. You know, I love food, I love being around it. I love, you know, whether it's this kind of big picture economy side of it and making businesses, or it's just the sharing, you know, a dish with friends or family, or maybe even someone you haven't met. You know, I think that's what gets me excited. You know, outside of the business, is just having those connections and building that around food. I think it's a powerful thing.
Hey, you know, it's the best when you can combine food, booze, and relationships.
Yeah. Oh yeah, 24/7. That's my life.
That's all you need, right? With some sleep, of course.
Exactly. Yeah, we should be drinking and eating some food. We can do that another time.
Yeah, next time. Colin, thank you so much. Where can people find out more information about you, about Union Kitchen, if they want to reach out and learn more?
Absolutely. UnionKitchen.com is our website. You got everything on there. But of course, we've got our Instagram and Twitter, Facebook, Union Kitchen DC. I recommend just hop on our website. We've got a lot of cool articles, a lot of things that we put out there for people to learn, to learn about the businesses, to learn about, you know, their own path that they want to be a business, to learn about the community that, you know, we're trying to build.
Yes. Please check out the website. A ton of great information for those who want to get involved in the industry. I completely agree.
Cool. Well, thanks.
Colin, thank you again so much.
Yeah, thank you. It's awesome. It's fun to talk about this. It's fun to talk with you about this. Look forward to, you know, catching up another time. And appreciate you putting on this podcast.
No, thank you. It was a ton of fun. Take care.
All right. Take care.
If you haven't done so already, please make sure to subscribe to the show and leave a review and comment and let me know what you think. Thank you. And I'll see you all very soon on the next episode.